Welcome back to another episode, everyone, of the Plants and Policies podcast. My name is Ina Maria Tonchescu. I'm the Managing Director at Canadians for Responsible Food Policy, and I'm joined by my colleague and friend, graduate student and researcher, Maddie Youngman. Tomorrow is World Water Day. And I have to say, I absolutely love the fact that we have these national or international holidays or days that we can take advantage of where we can bring national and international attention to important subjects that the whole world should know about and be concerned about. For this day, I want to talk about how animal agriculture is linked to water and draw some correlations between pollution, access to water, and the water use associated to animal agriculture. So let's hop right into it. And I'm going to ask Maddie some questions around this.
I was just going to say, I really want to engage with the audience a little bit and ask you folks to send us an email at email address, hello@responsiblefoodpolicy.ca, letting us know if and what else you would like us to cover. And so we can get right into it. Ina, did you know that the agriculture sector is by far the biggest use of fresh water globally? And this is according to the Government of Canada's Agricultural Department. They say that it takes 95 liters per day in the summer to raise a lactating cow, as in a cow that is used for dairy. And that is a lot.
That is a lot. And it's not something that I actually knew, by the way, Maddie, before getting into this line of work. I would have never known or even drawn a line between water and what's actually on my plate. I'll be very honest with you. I never thought about that. And I don't know if others are thinking about that at all, but I personally never thought about, you know, because in fashion, they always talk about this, right? It takes 3,000 liters of water to produce a t-shirt, for example, which is why, for example, CRFP doesn't do merchandise, right? But in the same breath, I never thought about something being on my plate or let's say consuming meat or dairy and then thinking about how much water it took to actually produce that. It just, water didn't come to mind, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And like in line with like fashion, I hear a lot about, you know, how much water is polluted and used to make a pair of blue jeans, like brand new. Right. And that is something I think at least a lot of people that I know really know. It's like drilled into our brains. But for agriculture, it, you know, it makes sense when you think about it. But if you don't ever think about it, then, you know, when you think about, you know, how much of the water that we like need to survive, it's just, so a lot of it's coming from food, obviously. A lot of it's coming from us drinking water. But yeah, the fact that the food that we eat holds a lot of that water that we don't even get at the end because it's going through the animal itself. So just to maintain its life, right? And so like a lot of that water we don't even see. And then also the water that goes through for to feed them through the crops.
Right, through the crops as well. Yeah, exactly.
So just thinking about that, like how much water does it take for agriculture to even operate at all? According to the Government of Canada, the agricultural sector is by far the biggest use of fresh water, which is what we mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast, which is insane. I know the oil industry is up there as well. And they say that in Africa and Asia, it is estimated that 85% to 90% of all fresh water used is for agriculture. And these are in, you know, more sort of desert-like conditions, I would say, less access to fresh water in certain parts of Africa, at least. And according to the estimates for the year 2000, agriculture accounted for 67% of the world's total freshwater withdrawal and 86% of its consumption. And we have limited freshwater here, folks. We have to be a little careful.
I'm actually going to take a step back and remind everyone that about 3% of all of the water on the planet is fresh water. And according to worldcounts.com, we have only less than 1% of this ready for human use. And our fresh water accounts for just 0.03% of all water available globally. And here's another not fun fact to make. 1 kilogram of beef, it takes 15,500 liters of fresh water to consume.
That is wild. And again, it's sort of like the accumulation of the crops, watering the crops that get fed to the animal actually needs to be drinking the water. And then throughout its life, very short-lived life. So if it lived longer, it would be a little bit of a higher number. And so, yeah, the sort of lifespan and the food used and grown for the animal is accounted in these numbers. That's why they seem quite high. And a lot of the times we see studies that actually don't account for some of that. And that was where we can get some weird numbers that conflate with the numbers that we actually know to be accurate. So according to the same source, the world demands for fresh water are going to be increasing 55% between the year 2000 and 2050, which is really not that far anymore once you think about it. It's 2024, and 2000 is about the same distance away as 2050, and that's a little bit terrifying to think about, but we
My
still
God.
have time, you know? It's about halfway.
Wow. I didn't even actually think about the fact that we're literally halfway between that, between those numbers. That is wow. I think the older you get, the faster time flies. And this is what's happening to me right now. I just felt my age a little bit.
Do you know why that is? Just a side note. Do you know why that
No.
is? It's because you're the way that you're not forming new memories as much anymore as you did when you were a kid. So everything was super new when you were a kid. And so as time goes by, you're not forming as many new memories. And so the time takes, it feels shorter.
Is this your way of telling me I don't live my life enough, Maddie?
Hey, I don't live my life enough either. But if I was 1 year old and having everything be new to me again, I would go back. It would feel like 5 years of my life to spend, I don't know, 12 months as a 1 year old experiencing everything for the first time.
Listen, folks, we're not living our lives because we're spending our time trying to get all this research together for this podcast. We work very hard to put all of this information together. And of course, Maddie does the research on the other sides of the things that we're doing, and to put these put the bring these things forward to the public in as many ways as possible. So we need to live a little more, make a little more memories, okay, everyone? Now, I'll get back to this. There are many aspects of our lives that we cannot change. And of course, it very much depends on where we're located in the world and the access to what we have, and of course, the abilities that we have. And yes, there are many things that we cannot change, but there are things that we can address, especially in the West, which is very much known for its excessive consumption of everything, literally everything. I'll always dial it back to animal agriculture because to me, it's a low-hanging fruit. It's something that science says we should be reducing consumption of. It's something that history shows we've been consuming more and more of, and we were never built to consume the amount of meat and dairy that we currently do. This is why I think a lot of the changes can really come from our diets. And to me, again, to those who are capable, and many of us are, it is the easiest change. That's the low-hanging fruit that I'm talking about.
And I think it's becoming a lot more popular now to think about sort of being more critical about our food system, just as we sort of are with the gas and oil industries, and sort of like looking at these systems and thinking like maybe we are not really fit to be doing this amount of extraction and consumption. And yeah, and so I think it's becoming a lot more widespread, and I'm really excited about that because a lot of the research has been saying that we need to be looking at the food system a little bit more critically. And now I think folks are really getting on board with that. So I
I hope
feel very
so.
hopeful.
Good, good.
So going back to, you know, the increased consumption of water use, Hoekstra et al. In 2013, in their article, The Water Footprint of Poultry, Pork, and Beef, a Comparative Study in Different Countries and Production Systems, claim that today, the global water footprint of animal production constitutes almost one third of the water footprint of the total agricultural production, and this fraction is likely to increase. And again, this is from 2013, and they were projecting increases from there. And it who knows what it is now, you know? I wish they would do the study again and kind of look at this stuff again. In their article, Hoekstra, shows that the food-related water footprint of a consumer in the industrialized country can be reduced by 36% if they were to shift from an average meat-based diet to a vegetarian diet. And, you know, that's just vegetarian. And this is in, you know, 2011. Imagine what it would have been if it was fully plant-based and we have the sort of technologies that we have now to, you know, lessen water consumption for plant-based.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think honestly, any reduction is a good reduction. I think we need to start somewhere. And I think we need to be looking at this research. And I want to say one thing on this research as well, Maddie, as hopeful as I am for the changes that are already happening right in front of our eyes. And the fact that the government of Canada is already showing everyone that they can save the environment by simply eating in line with the Canadian Food Guide, which is predominantly plant-based. I'm seeing all of these pushes. What I'm hoping for with our podcast, with our future research hub, with all of these little things that we're doing, or well, big things that we're doing, I'm hoping that we have more people reached. Because one of the things that I quickly realized when I first joined CRFP back in 2022 is that this research is not widely available. It is not put through on mainstream media or found on social media, unless you're kind of in that like little echo chamber of environmentalism or some kind of movement towards more plant-based consumption. And I think that hopefully through a podcast that we're making available on YouTube and that we're doing through all of the channels like Spotify and Podbean, et cetera, and to be doing more social media things that are reflecting and interpreting research, which is part of the things that you do for us. I'm hoping that that will bring more of this information to people so that more people are educated in some of these things. I think that a lot of people are missing details. I think that information is power, and we have not yet given all of this power to the general population. Now, if water is not being used, it is also being polluted. And I'd like to point to the UNFAO's environmental program 2016, and I'm going to quote something from that. Agriculture, which accounts for 70% of water abstractions worldwide, plays a major role in water pollution. Farms discharge large quantities of agrochemicals, organic matter, drugs, residues, sediments, and saline drainage into water bodies. The resultant water pollution poses demonstrated risks to aquatic ecosystems, human health, and productive activities, end quote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is something that we sort of mentioned in our biodiversity episode and some posts on social media related to biodiversity and the pollution of our waterways and our water systems for agriculture and how deadly and detrimental that is to the health of the environments and the ecosystems that live and around that water system. Not only our own drinking safety is also at risk there. We'll kind of get to that in a little bit. And so just pulling from that same report from the UNFAO, they quote, agricultural pressures on water quality come from cropping and livestock systems and aquaculture. These all have expanded and intensified to be meeting increasing food demands related to population growth and changes in our dietary patterns, which we have seen in the research to be increasing our meat consumption as countries become richer, which is a good thing for countries to become richer. I will not, you know, deny that. However, when we see countries sort of copy North America and the countries that are sort of the richest at the moment, our food systems cannot handle that. And we need to sort of be aware of that. And our water system will definitely be screaming at us to sort of say, slow down, please, we don't have enough water. Like, we won't be able to cycle through this much water, or our water will be polluted, et cetera.
So I see two large issues here. It's the amount of consumption and the choices that we're making. Oftentimes, we're not aware of how impactful our decisions are, whether negatively or positively. And by choosing to reduce our meat and dairy intakes, we could have a positive impact on the environment. But what happens when it's the other way and we are consuming and especially consuming these large quantities?
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to take a little bit, as I alluded to previously, about how Indigenous people and First Nations are affected by the decisions that we make. You know, so according to the IndigenousFoundation.org's report, Indigenous safe drinking water crisis in Canada. An overview from Sena Yelnemez. Canada possesses the world's largest freshwater reserves. Despite that, 618 First Nations communities are not supplied with safe drinking water, she says. This issue has been going on for decades, especially within these communities that are suffering from the full weight of the consequences of the inadequate water that they have. Mm-hmm. The lack of clean, safe drinking water in the Canadian First Nation communities is one of the greatest violations of the United Nations recognized human rights to water and sanitation, she says. And they sort of live under this constant threat of boil bans. And I'm not sure, Ina, if you've ever had to be under a boil ban or avoid water in fear that it's always being contaminated. Mm-hmm. But I lived in a precarious situation once where there was a snowstorm. It was not, we were not prepared for such things. Mm-hmm. And because of freezing pipes and various things like that, we actually did have a boil ban. And mm-hmm. it was really terrifying. And unfortunately, our Indigenous communities live under these conditions on reserve all of the time. Mm-hmm. So this position also forces them, the Indigenous folks, to buy bottles of water or large gallons of water from stores that can be located very far away, as we've talked about before. But also, not just that, but very expensive to buy, like $40, $50 for a gallon of water.
Literal food desert, but mm-hmm. in
water
in
desert.
Water version. Yeah. According to our friends at the York Food Policy, I'm going to quote something. In 2011, agricultural water use was allocated 85% for crop production and 15% for animal production. It was responsible for 5% of water withdrawn from Canada's rivers, lakes, and groundwater by household and economic activities. But unlike other major water users, agriculture consumes most of what it withdraws. Whereas other major users return it to the environment, agriculture only returned about 16% of the water withdrawn from crop and animal production.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd be interested to see what they say about how much of that water is polluted. Mm-hmm. And how much work needs to be done to clean that water if they ever get it back to recycle it. So from that same report from York Food Policy, they quote, by some estimates, 50% of native wetlands have been drained. Many rivers have been diverted, lakes and ponds dammed and drained, and tens of thousands of miles of till drains installed, all leading to profound disruption of regional water flows, and settlements and pavements further disrupt these flows. In earlier periods, contamination with animal and human waste were enormous, gradually cleaned up as the disease implications were discovered. And these sorts of things happen quite often, especially in rural and Indigenous communities. Mm-hmm. They say, we're still living under the legacy of chemical contaminants, and in fact, they say by many indications, the situation has worsened mm-hmm. over the years and our food production systems have become more intense. And they're sort of seeing that link between mm-hmm. those two. And that's where we can sort of, I guess, tackle the situation because we're seeing this link. And yeah, that's where our solution lies, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. York Food Policy also cited Harry Aking's 2011 Future Protein Supply Trends Report. And I quote, many crops grown and animals raised are significant users of water. Intensive animal protein requires 10 to 1,000 times more water than plant protein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on that same note, according to our good friends at Our World in Data, they were looking at a Pour and Nemesek paper mm-hmm. that charted water use in 2018, mm-hmm. and they did it per kilogram of food product. And these are some of the findings that they had. Mm-hmm. So 1 kilogram of cheese actually uses 5,605 liters of water, as compared to 1 kilogram of peas, which was only 397 liters of water. And 1 kilogram of other pulses that they described were around 436 liters. And just to throw it in there, our good friend tofu 1 kilogram of tofu, which is essentially fermented soybeans, only used 149 liters of water, Ina, which is great because I love tofu.
Yeah, I love tofu. Tofu is my bestie. And
me too.
I put it in everything. And I don't know if anyone's had shredded smoked tofu and a little bit of hoisin sauce and soy sauce, but you'll thank me later. Okay. But that is a drastic, drastic difference, Maddie.
Yeah. So drastic that we were stuttering about the alliteration. It's so, so intense.
Exactly. This is going to go into our bloopers, which I think we'll do at least one year of bloopers for everybody. You know, I hope no one is eating a kilogram of cheese like ever. Forget about the water use for a second, but the cholesterol and fats. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, also I'm like picturing like how much is that? Like, that's a lot of cheese.
Well, you know, if you, so in out this way, and I'll always say out this way because I'm very quickly learning that the world is very different outside of our little domes of the lives that we lead. But in here, we have a store called No Frills, which is a Loblaw company. Many of you would have heard about Loblaws because they would have been in the news with the grocery store price hikes and everything. And our government arguing with the CEOs of these companies. But in No Frills, there are literal packets of cheese that are 450 grams of the little, you know, no-name cheese. And, you know, I'll be honest with you that I have, you know, previously in my past when I was consuming dairy, I previously would have like cut half of that at once and literally just sat and eaten it while I was like working or focusing on something. And it's very easy to consume that at once. And especially because it has casein in it, which makes it super addictive. So you kind of want to go and get more and more. But I hope to God I never went to a kilogram of cheese at once, because the amount of weight that that adds onto your body to process, I think is something that needs to be pretty much screamed from the top of every building, because that's concerning. So I really hope no one's eating a kilogram of cheese. Okay.
Well, yeah. And just a like future note, I would love to talk about lactose intolerance on this podcast. And like, I am personally lactose intolerant, and I did not realize until I was probably about 19 years old, which is way too long to be suffering through lactose intolerance.
So we can talk about lactose intolerance, which I can definitely make in the future podcast, but I don't believe that it's lactose intolerance. I just think we're not really meant to be eating another mammal's excretions. And we are the only mammal in this world that consumes another mammal's secretions. And I feel like that might have something to do with the fact that we are experiencing what we do. And if you look at the vast population in the world, most people are what you're quoting as, you know, quote unquote, lactose intolerant.
Certainly. Yeah. I definitely understand that lactose intolerant is sort of the term that goes around, but I do understand there's like nuance to lactose intolerance. But sort of going back to water, I mean, you know, dairy and water, a lot of dairy is water. But the concerns with consuming that much animal and animal byproduct are too long to list. But cholesterol definitely makes the list, as it does the water use associated with growing livestock and the crops for that livestock, as we've sort of reiterated again. That's something that gets missed a lot of the time. So what's the change that we can do here? What is it that we can do? The biggest change that we can make right now, especially as individuals, is purely reduction. It's not even that we fully need to replace everything. Reduction is key. And according to Madre Brava, their 2023 report, if everyone in the UK and the EU had meatless Mondays and Tuesdays, so purely reduction of 2 days worth of meat reduction, they claim the moderate plant shift could also free up an area bigger than the entire United Kingdom and save 2.2 cubic kilometers of water, or 880,000 swimming pools worth of water each year, which is a lot of water, to put it in perspective.
Yeah. And the studies are endless, folks. Even the Canadian government points out just how much our current food system is using up our diminishing resources. We have choices to make, everyone, and policies to change. Of course, that's what we work on. And educating others about just how much their decisions impact the planet, that just may make someone think twice about what's on their plates. So let's leave it there for now. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to another Plants and Policies podcast episode. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Podbean, Samsung, Google Podcasts, and more. You're going to get tired of me saying all of this list of places that we're in, but it's so cool that we're in all of them. And I just want to say thank you. If you want to have anything to add to this, always feel free to email us at hello@responsiblefoodpolicy.ca. And you can also look into sponsoring this podcast, which is coming up. We already have a few folks looking to sponsor. If you'd like to be a guest on the show as well, by the way, that is open. It's just Maddie and I for now because we wanted to get this started, but that doesn't mean that you can't join us as well. We always want to have these, and we'll prep a podcast script with you in advance so that we make sure that this goes as easily as possible for you. So sponsor or have a conversation with us or have some feedback, hello@responsiblefoodpolicy.ca. And until next time, thank you for listening. Bye for now.